From the Motorsport Network, I'm Tom Howard, and you're listening to Gravel Notes. The World Rally Championship headed to Africa last weekend for one of its jewel in the crown events, the Safari Rally Kenya. While regarded as the toughest round on the calendar, thanks to its harsh terrain, reigning world champions Kalle Rovanperä and Jonny Hautanen made it look simple, scoring a dominant first win of their partial campaign. Toyota once again proved to be the team to beat, as Takamoto Katsuta produced a fine drive to finish second, ahead of another impressive performance from M Sport Ford's Adrian Formeau. Joining me to discuss last weekend's rally is my co-driver for this pod, rally journalist Luke Barry. Welcome. How are you going, Luke?
I'm good, mate. It feels like it's a while since he's done this, doesn't it? Like, we did do a bit of a bonus episode, but we've had quite a gap between rallies, so it's nice to get back talking about cycling again, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And what a rally to start with. I mean, it's one of the cracking ones, isn't it? It really is a special one, not on just the rally calendar, but in the motorsport calendar in general. You don't have any events like this in any other championship.
No, it's kind of like Le Mans in the World Endurance Championship, isn't it? And to be fair, you can maybe say that about several WRC rallies, actually. There's a few Finns that might not like me saying this about Safari, but it is one of those absolute standout events, as you say, in the motorsport calendar, not just our little corner of it in rallying. So, yeah, great to see it back, and great to see it back in Easter as well, back to its more traditional date for, I think, the first time since, like, 2000 or something like that. I need to double-check myself. So, yeah, and maybe didn't bring all the rain that we expected being in rainy season, but still a cracking event, as you say.
So let's dig into it then. Obviously, the headlines being, obviously, Toyota still kings of Africa, and Kalle Rovanperä, well, I mean, what a performance from the Finn. The world champion was supreme, one of the only drivers not to suffer a puncture or any major delays in this harsh terrain. To deliver a victory like that was stunning, wasn't it?
I think it would be easy to try and suggest this was lucky, but it was anything but. This was a supremely well-managed performance from both of them. I think it's nice you mentioned Jonny in there, the two of them. This is a team effort. It's what's always been unique about rallying, but I think particularly in an event as demanding as a Safari, you both need to have to be completely on song to get that kind of result. And you're right, literally nothing went wrong all weekend, which on any weekend in rallying is a surprise, but on the Safari, it's a mega achievement. I think I'm struggling to think of anything really to say about the performance, and I guess that's the biggest credit or compliment you can give on a rally as tough as this. It was just seamless.
Yeah, it was just sensational. I think it also sort of underlines just what a talent these two are, and obviously Kalle behind the wheel as well. And I guess we are missing them this year because they're only doing a part-time campaign, but when they come back and when they're firing, it really is something to behold. We're not really surprised by Kalle Rovanperä's performances anymore, but the fact that he's able to deliver these drives in such difficult conditions is quite extraordinary, really. The Toyota team boss Jari Mäntylä says that he's just got this ability to know when to push, when to back off, where the dangers are. And for someone at the age of 23 to be able to do that, whereas the other drivers seemingly are a little bit sort of, let's not be critical, but they just aren't as good at it as Kalle. It's quite extraordinary, isn't it?
I think, first of all, we love a good Jari Mäntylä quote, don't we? He is like the philosopher of rallying. He always has something really sort of deep and meaningful to say about a driver's performance. So, but it's very, very hard to disagree with him here. And I think you're right. It's a weird one because you would never... I can't think of anything major that any of the others are doing wrong, but this is no flash in the pan for Rovanperä. He's always been good at Safari. Even that first year, I think it was Fesh that ended up catching him out. He was still, I think he was maybe second, but he was definitely doing very well before he got slightly caught out. So he's always had a good track record here. And it's just tempting to wonder if it's anything to do with his early start in rallying. We always talk about this with Kalle, that he's 23, but it's incredibly hard to believe that because he's got so much experience behind the wheel. He was, we all know, driving a car around a frozen lake at 8 years old. So it's almost habitual for him now. He doesn't have to think about anything when he's driving. It's such a natural extension of him that I do wonder if that actually gives him a slight edge over maybe some others, that he doesn't have to think about the driving, but then he can assess everything else. His brain is focusing only on the risk rather than any of the driving the car parts, which I don't know if I've explained that properly, but I think you understand what I'm trying to get at. It is one of the things that for me has always set him apart, and it's definitely exaggerated by rallies as challenging as Safari, where it requires a bit of extra outside thinking, I guess.
Yeah, you're right. And as you said, he's won Safari before. He's also won the Acropolis twice, which are the sort of known as the toughest events. You know, the Acropolis is sometimes known as the European Safari. So, like, he clearly has just got a talent for this. But what I do like about that is that not only is he just brilliant at being able to deliver these performances, like we saw, I think it was in stage four, where he can also just blow away the competition and win a stage by 11.1 seconds. And you're like, okay. So not only is he just unbelievably fast, he's also supremely careful and mechanical sympathy. His mechanical sympathy is unbelievable, isn't it? But I guess we also have to say that Toyota car is pretty bulletproof as well. So there's a lot of credit that goes to Toyota for this as well. And as I guess we will come across in as we get through this podcast. But yeah, there's a lot of credit has to go to Toyota as well.
Absolutely, but just thinking about it there, actually, there's almost an element of the Colin McRae to all of this, in that Colin was always known as his driver that was always flamboyant and flat out and could dominate stages, but equally, when the going got rough, he was one of the best at looking after the car and actually grinding out the results. I'm sure he won Acropolis like five times, he got three Safari wins, so they were actually some of his more successful events, and I guess we're actually now seeing the same with Robin Perra, so that's interesting as well.
That's a very good point, actually. I should have included that in my report, Luke. So you've really highlighted something that I really should have covered. But yeah, no, you're absolutely spot on. And yeah, I guess we will talk about Toyota. Obviously, they are the kings of Africa. It's now, they've won the last four Safari rallies since it's returned in 2021. They are the team to beat. Takamoto Katsuta finished second. And we should now, I guess, really talk about Taka's performance, because Sweden was very difficult. He was challenging for the victory against Esa-Pekka Lappi, but he made a mistake and it actually reduced him to tears. That's how much it meant to him. So to bounce back in one of the toughest rallies, to finish second, and also I think it's his third podium in four outings in Safari, so it's quite an extraordinary record. I mean, everyone loves Taka. It was good to see him back on the podium again, wasn't it?
Absolutely. And as you said, in the context of what happened in Sweden, it was perfect timing to get back on that podium, to bounce back from that huge disappointment. And I think I said it on this podcast, actually, that I was almost a little bit worried for him that Kenya was coming that soon after, because it was an event that in the past he'd always done well at, so the expectation therefore was a bit high, and I just wondered if it was maybe not an ideal time for Taka to have that pressure on him. But you would not have known there was any kind of pressure at all, given how he conducted himself, how he drove at the weekend, consistently just staying out of trouble and matching. I know obviously his teammate Elvin Evans, we'll get onto in a second, he had a difficult Saturday in particular, but even before then the two of them were incredibly closely matched, so the pace was there as well. So yeah, just the perfect performance, backing up Robin Perra, giving Toyota much needed championship points, which has helped them back ahead of Hyundai in the manufacturers race. Yeah, brilliant result, and as you say, wonderful to see, because he's becoming slightly a bit of a Safari legend now, is Taka, isn't he? With so many podiums.
You do sort of wonder now if the first win is going to come in Safari for Taka, because like, he clearly is good there, isn't he?
It would be fitting, wouldn't it? I think the only place that would be nicer for him would be either Finland or, of course, Japan, like his two home countries. But beyond there, I think, yeah, this is an event he clearly loves, he clearly feels at one with the people around him. I'm sure I saw some quotes somewhere in the media that he really just feels connected to the Kenyan people. It's a country he feels comfortable in. So, yeah, I mean, you can't underestimate how much that will help a driver. Just for everything, like the familiarity of getting there and the entire atmosphere around everywhere, it's somewhere he always excels at. So, you're right, I think it can't be far away. No matter where that country is, it cannot be far away a maiden Katsuta win in WRC.
And sorry, just to backtrack, there is a point I should have made, or we should have discussed about Kalle, and it's his reaction after the victory. He's quite reserved and often quite modest about his own skills and achievements, but his reaction to the victory was, I don't think you can drive a better Safari than what we did, which is unusual for Kalle to come out with such a bullish statement. And I have to say, it's hard to disagree with this statement, but what did you make of that?
It's a bad thing to say in a podcast, but I can't really add too much more than what you've said. I think I was surprised to hear, and at first I don't think I really took it in, because he delivered it in his typically just calm and measured style to the camera. But it's when you see the quote written down, you're like, wow, that is a big statement. But you're right, it's incredibly hard to disagree with him. But it was, as you say, interesting to see him so sort of confidently backing himself, because I guess all drivers at this level can be like this, but particularly Robin Perry. He's very self-critical. He won't always, there'll always be a factor or two that's helped him, but he was very keen to make the point that no, this was him and Yanni in the car. Everything was perfect. They did the perfect weekend. Yeah, it's the ultimate 10 out of 10 performance really for me.
Absolutely. And as you said, yeah, we touched on Elvin there, just the final Toyota driver to finish this puzzle. And he obviously had a difficult Saturday where I think it was three punctures and a tire off the rim. So he had a lot of delays, which, you know, ultimately he finished fourth. He obviously would have been a bit better. He did have some struggles early in the weekend with balance, but so did all the Toyota drivers at the start. It's actually easy to forget that they all actually were complaining of understeer. But anyway, they still came through with a decent result. But for Elvin, you know, he's picked up decent points. Okay, Thierry Neuville has outscored him this weekend, but I think in the circumstances when you have that amount of delays in Safari, he's probably quite thankful actually looking back on the points now.
Yeah, I think so. But knowing Elvin, he won't be, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
It takes a lot to make him genuinely pleased after a weekend. But yeah, I think in context, this is the best he could have done. Without it, he probably could have got a podium finish, which would have obviously helped Toyota preserve its... I was going to say preserve its record. It couldn't get the 1-2-3-4s it's had in the past couple of years because it only had three cars. But that would have been the lockout of all it had. But obviously, they didn't quite manage that. But no, it was Saturday in particular, incredibly difficult for Elvin, as you say, with all those punctures. That ruined really any chance of a better result. I guess in some respects, he was fortunate that his main title rival, Neuville, also had a fairly significant issue on certainly the second half of Saturday. So yeah, I think in all things considered, it's not too bad. But you mentioned it. I think the fact he's been outscored by Thierry, it's never ideal, is it? Like, I don't think he could have done much about it, really, given how the sort of cards were dealt. But that will be the thing that disappoints him most after this, because, of course, the next round of the championship is Tarmac, where actually starting first of the road should be an advantage. So, yeah, it's... that will be the thing that disappoints him, is that he's let a little bit of ground slip to Thierry.
Absolutely, yeah. I think you're absolutely perfectly correct there. As you said, like, Elvin will be disappointed to... I think the championship gap is now 6 points. It was three heading into Kenya. So, yeah, he was... And obviously the quirk of the new point system means that Thierry actually would have scored one more point than he would have done if we were using last year's point system, if you compare the two. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. But that neatly gets us on to Hyundai, which was obviously... another really difficult weekend for them in Kenya. They've only had one podium finish in 4 years, and that stat remains now. Incredibly difficult. I guess we'll start with the issues with Thierry. First, he had a puncture on Friday, and then what I did like is that, again, they're thinking on their feet, Thierry and Martin Vida, to repair or at least try and fix some of the massive hole that was ripped in the side of the car from the tyres by, as Thierry said, quoted, a bit of MacGyver-style repair with his branch and a cloth. That's the sort of rally stories that we like to see. But yeah, then obviously the big issue is he got actually climbed back up to second through all the punctures for the Toyota rivals. But then there was this fuel system issue, which really, really put pay to any chances of a podium. He lost 10 minutes. The frustration was clear on his face. He was very, very angry about it. And you can be completely understand that, can't you? I mean, it was such a rough deal for him to go through after all of that.
I was going to say, yeah, for fighting so hard to make yourself back. And I think it is probably forgotten by a lot of people now. We're out of the weekend that he did, as you say, get back up to second place, which was remarkable considering, and that would have been absolutely ideal for him in terms of the championship, because obviously Cali is not a full-time player, so that would make Thierry, before we get to all the quirks of the Sundays and power stages and everything else, that would make him the highest scoring driver of the full-time runners. So that's the place to be if he can't be first. But yeah, I think the biggest sucker punch for Neuville will be the fact this is not a first-time problem. Maybe, I guess, this specific one. We still don't know the full details of what happened. Thierry was very clear he didn't know. Whether that's true, I don't know. But the team was not really for telling us much, other than it was fuel-related. But it's not a new experience for Thierry to come to Africa, push flat out, really try and not really reap the rewards that his driving probably deserves. There are some fundamental problems, I guess, with the Hyundai in this condition, where Toyota seem to have a car that is both fast and almost bulletproof. The Hyundai now is certainly getting quicker. We've seen that this year with its two wins in both Monte and Sweden, but this was maybe a bit of a bump down back to earth of where some of their problems still are.
Absolutely, and I couldn't put it better myself. You know, actually, if you look at the stage times, Hyundai were much quicker in Kenya than they were in previous years. So the gap clearly on the performance side has closed with all these upgrades. But again, obviously, it all sort of goes back to the start, the birth of that car and how rushed it was. So they're still sort of feeling the effects of that, Hyundai. And as we know, they want to try and get these issues sorted, but within the rules and the way the homologation jokers work, it's very difficult for them to be able to do this. Obviously, they had planned next year to have quite a significant upgrade to the car. That's now going to be scrapped because of the rule changes for next year from the FIA. So you can understand why they're very aggrieved and must feel pretty hacked off. But also, for the drivers, what can they do? They can push, but then if there's a problem with the fuel system, which again, not Safari related, as Thierry said, and Cyril said that they were unsure, they'd never seen this problem before. Like, what can you do if you're Thierry? Like, it must be so heartbreaking.
Yeah, it's a tough one. We can sit here and talk about it. We don't know what it feels like. We've not driven as much as it makes us sad. We'd love to, of course, but we haven't driven in the World Rally Championship. So we don't know. But you can, on a human level, you can imagine it, can't you? You've worked really hard for something. You feel like you deserve more than you're getting, and something out of your control robs you. Fair play to them, though, I have to say. Thierry is becoming a bit of a master at sort of really nailing the weekend strategy. I think I've not sat and worked out, but I'm pretty sure he'll be the highest scoring driver on Sundays this year. We've obviously had this change in points where the top seven get additional points from seven down to one, as well as the power stage of the final stage of the rally. So it's a big waiting. It's a debate that I guess still rumbles on amongst WRC fans, but I don't know if you want to get involved in that particular podcast. But yeah, he's become very, very good at maximizing those opportunities, because as we said, that weekend their fifth place was going to get him, in the old system, 10 points for a weekend, wasn't it? This was, I think, 8, if I can remember correctly. So he then got an additional 11 points from Sunday. So just from like 6 stages of driving, he got more points than the rest of the other 2 days. He won the power stage and was second quickest, only to his teammate on Sunday's classification. And part of that was obviously hitting that massive rock left in line for him on that final stage of the morning. So yeah, he's becoming very, very good at maximizing everything that he can. And I have to say, I said it after Monte Carlo and I got very carried away with it, because obviously he'd had such a domineering performance, but I'm really struggling to look past him as a real favourite for this championship now. The way things are going, he's not, at least he himself isn't putting anything wrong at the moment.
No, it's, and he's, I guess what you have to give credit for is his fighting. You know, he never gives up. He always fights, no matter what happens. I remember seeing him in Croatia a couple of years back, like him and Martin pushing the car into service a kilometre because they just don't give up. You have to admire it. And it's sort of, I know this is probably a reference that, you know, perhaps the older generation will get, but it reminds me of that night in the Holy Grail, the Monty Python film, where he loses his arms and legs but still keeps fighting. Like, that's what he reminds me of. He's that guy that just will not give up no matter what happens, and you have to give him credit for that. Like, it's extraordinary. And again, that sort of not giving up attitude, and then maximizing, as you say, the Sunday strategy by going out and doing, I think he got 11 out of 12 points on Sunday. Like, that could win him the championship.
Yeah, easily. But you're right, I think rally drivers are all tenacious, aren't they? By nature, you have to be in this sport. But I think Thierry probably is the most, he will fight no matter what the occasion. And maybe he's got quite used to it because he's been let down by a few things in the past. Perhaps that sort of builds it up a bit. And he's still on this quest to, he's got, we all know famously, 5 times a runner-up and never a champion. So there's definitely a bit of back against the wall there with him. But no, it is incredible how willing he is just to fight for every single thing, no matter what it is. Whether it's just 1 point, a tenth of a second, don't matter. He will go and grab it. So yeah, impressively stuff. Impressively tenacious.
And I guess let's move on to the other Hyundai issue, shall we say. Esa-Pekka Lappi, after Safari last year, where he went through 4 prop shafts, did earn himself the nickname Mr. Propshaft within the Hyundai team, given what happened. This year, two transmission failures for Esa Pekka Lappi, which obviously, again, he was actually second when the first one hit. So again, he could have been a factor in this rally. But he just has the worst safari luck. I mean, he's only been there twice, but if you list the amount of things that have gone wrong, it's incredible. And then this year, on top of the transmission issues, he has, what, two birds fly into his windscreen and smash that so he can't see where he's going in the final stage of Saturday, and even had like glass fragments in his eyes. Like, I mean, what has this guy done to deserve this sort of luck in Africa?
I dare say he's not going to be taking the family on a safari, is he, anytime soon? He might be trying to avoid the continent for a good while. But no, it was a really interesting one. Firstly, in that, I guess it wasn't a Propshaft problem, but it's a transmission problem. From what we can understand, this is effectively almost a deferral of last year's issue just manifesting itself elsewhere in the car. A lack of available homologation jokers for the team to further develop the cars meant they can't do everything, and there still clearly was a weakness that they were hoping wasn't there, but has been exposed again on Lappi's car. So that's not great, really, is it? I mean, as you say, you're right. I think it gets forgotten that he was only a few seconds off Robin Perra, wasn't he? He wasn't far away. Not suggesting he would have beaten him per se, but as you say, he would have been a there you go, stats man. But so, he would have been a genuine factor in the battle there. So yeah, to see him parked up was a big shame for the contest. But yeah, for him, that was just the signalling of it all just going downhill thereafter. The stuff with the birds and the windscreen was quite scary, actually, to be honest. That could have been a lot worse, really, when you think about it. So I guess in some respects it was a fortunate escape, but for that to happen to a driver consistently, I'm sure, yeah, he'll be, if he's still on a part-time program with Hyundai next year, I'm sure he's pushing not to be the one to go to Safari. I dare say it's not his favourite rally in the calendar at the moment.
No, it's just quite the contrast, isn't it? Obviously, getting his, you know, first win for 6.5 years in Sweden, and then for that to happen in the next round, you go from rags to riches sort of thing. It's or the other way around, if however you want to put it. But yeah, and I guess the other Hyundai that hit trouble, but this wasn't a reliability issue, was Oit Tanak, and obviously he needed a really strong result here and a clean rally after mistakes in Monty in Sweden. But what happened was he hit a rock in the middle of the road, and there's nothing really he could have done. There was no way he could have avoided it, but it just lifted the car up and carried it straight into a bank where it, you know, suffered terminal steering arm damage. So, I mean, it's just, he can't buy any luck either at the moment, Oit Tanak.
No, I think you're right to say that, actually, because it could be easy to look at it without the context and think, oh yeah, Tanak's made another mistake. He made a small mistake in Monte Carlo. He obviously had made a bigger mistake in Sweden, but I don't think he could have done anything about this. This was purely, as you say, bad luck, really, at the worst possible time. He was already a little bit on the back foot versus Neuville and Evans, who, yes, have had their struggles, but more or less have had fairly clean starts to the championship. Now Tanak's, I think, a good 30-odd points off them, and particularly now with the way the point system works, I'm pretty sure Tanak has more points than he would have done, but with Sunday being so heavily weighted now, it's actually really hard for a driver who's had a bad weekend to recover points, because even those that are doing well can still use those same points. So to find a way to gain traction on other drivers is incredibly difficult now. So it's a bit of a mountain, I have to say, Tanak finds himself in. Obviously, seasons are long. We're 3 rounds in, we've got 10 left. He's not out of it by any means, but he's looking less like a convincing threat for the championship. And the other problem he's got as well is, we know Hyundai has sort of left it open with their two big number one drivers. At the moment, it's fair. Everybody can have whatever chance they have. But surely, as the season progresses, and I'm pretty sure we've heard Cyril Abitbol actually refer to this and hint that it could happen, at some point they're going to have to prioritise one of the drivers, back one of the horses effectively against Evans. And at the minute, Neuville was in a position to be that driver. So yes, there's 10 rounds left, but actually Tanak has a lot less than that, really, to actually be the guy that Hyundai wants to help if they can. So yeah, difficult start, but I did feel for him big time in Safari, because that was just, yeah, nothing he could have done about that one.
No, and it also, we should say that he did have some sort of mysterious troubles on the road section on Saturday, which we're not totally aware of. But for me, also, again, without intercom on Saturday, just goes, again, I'm so blown away by how these guys do this job. But to have no intercom in Safari and get through stages like that, I mean, I gotta take my hat off to them. Like, it's just incredible skill involved, not only from Oit but from Martin as well, Yavioa, to be able to use his hands to signal what's going on. Like, that is just phenomenal, isn't it?
It's crazy. It's the sort of stuff that, and it's breaching onto a bit of a wider debate this week. It's the sort of stuff that I think as a championship and as a sport, WRC needs to do more about shouting about, because us as fans, we all know how crazy this is, but it's about convincing everyone else. And there's things that happen in this sport that just do not happen anywhere else. Like, it's crazy. It is utterly mental. So, well, as a really bad example, and it's an excuse for me to tell the world that I did a rally once, I like doing that. But when I did my event last year, there were roads I generally know them. I grew up on those roads. But without pesos, even then I would have been a bit screwed. I would have been like questioning everything. And I was driving a lot slower than Art Tanak, let me tell you. So to be going at the pace they go without any sort of direction in your ear, just to trust that the corner is going to go the way you think it does, crazy. Yeah, completely mental.
And just going back to Oit, I know you obviously made that point there about, you know, with Sunday and the new point system. But if you actually think about it as well, there's the other way to look at it, in the fact that if that happened last year, the maximum points he could have earned from the weekend would have been 5 for the power stage. But he actually came away with significantly more. So it's such a weird one. It's hard to know whether it works for him or it doesn't. Like, it's quite an interesting debate, isn't it?
It's a fair point, actually, yeah, because he did, of course, he topped Sunday's classification, so he was 7, and I'm pretty sure second in the power stage, so 11 points, then plus however many he got for where he finished. I can't remember where he was. It's a bit confusing, but you're right, actually. It does work both ways, doesn't it? Yes, others can gain the points, but so can he. But this is the thing, I still don't think anybody's actually mastered this new strategy yet, which is what makes it quite intriguing. I know there are obviously flaws to it, but yeah, I'm still actually quite enjoying having this bit of a different complexion, and every single Sunday this season, I believe, has been more interesting because of it. And that was the goal, wasn't it? So I guess it has hit the brief.
Absolutely. I definitely agree with you that Sundays have been more interesting. They are definitely more complicated to write about, but they are definitely more interesting. We should talk about an interesting factor of the Safari Rally this year was we saw the return of the snorkel to the Rally 1 or the top tier cars. Now, this was a nice retro look back for the cars, and they looked very, very cool, I've got to say. What was your thoughts about it? I mean, obviously, they weren't really needed in the end because there wasn't that much rain that we were expecting. But I think, as a spectacle, the cars look cool, and it's another talking point, isn't it, for the championship?
Yeah, I think it's long overdue, really, to be honest. I found it really sad that when the WRC first went back in 21 that we didn't have the snorkels, because they were, as you say, such an integral part of imagery we all have of Safari back in the day. But then the other part was Rally 2 cars were allowed it, so that to me felt even stranger that they could have them, but the top cars, the flagship ones, the ones we're trying to sell to the world, didn't. So yeah, it was nice to see them back, even if actually in Hyundai's case they barely used it all weekend. I think it was really just for one loop on Saturday when they expected the rain, which didn't quite come as heavy as maybe everyone anticipated. But we got to see that Toyota as well did a very neat engineering solution that was, you could tell they probably thought about that. It was, I guess, as opposed to being a snorkel that was just attached to the A-pillar, it went across the roof as well. A bit more of an aerodynamically effective design. I have no idea how much of a difference that made. I'm not an engineer. I've not sat and studied all the times to know where it may have worked. But it was certainly interesting to see that was actually, because I wasn't aware that was effectively allowed in regulation. You could design your own. So it was nice to see something a bit different from them, I have to say.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you know, it's also it gives fans another thing to get excited about, and also they just look cool, don't they? The cars just look great. And I think a lot of the time, as you said earlier at the top of this podcast, like, a lot of this is about promotion and trying to get people excited, and you know, and stuff like that, whether it's very minor or whatever, just adds something a little bit extra to the party, doesn't it?
It does, and it forces you to buy another model car. So that's a bit of a bad news for your bank manager. But other than that, everyone else is happy.
Yep, no, I'm going to have to clear some shelf space now, aren't I? Because that's going to have to happen. Anyway, I guess we should talk now, I guess, the other sort of big topic that's still being talked about on the weekend is obviously the future. We won't go into too much detail, but we will address it. Obviously, Callum Robinson-Pera has Noit Tanak and Elvin Evans have all sort of had their say now on the sort of future direction of the championship, and particularly their, I guess, disagreement with the changes for next year in terms of the tweaks to the Rally 1 cars and the reasons behind that. Now, obviously, the drivers don't really understand it, and they don't think it's going to attract any more people to the entry lists. Certainly, the teams, in particularly Hyundai, are pretty upset about it, given that they've committed a lot of money and resource to upgrades to their car for next year, which has now been scrapped. While we want to talk about the rally, we can't really ignore that there's a lot going on behind the scenes at the moment that is a bit concerning.
Yeah, I think what this probably highlights is there's still a bit of disconnect between the FIA and WRC promoter, I dare say. It seems like not all the ideas are necessarily on the same page. And I guess this working group, in a sense, was trying to be clever in leaving as many things as it did open. I'm not going to go into a lot of details. We did do a podcast earlier in the year about that, so go please listen to that if you want a bit more of a detailed and I guess more of an initial snap reaction to what all of that meant. But it's certainly worrying, as you say, to hear so many of the important players, i.e. the drivers, but particularly the manufacturers, because that's where the big sort of interest here is and the priority is, don't seem particularly happy with what's being put in front of them. Of course, all of this is still proposals. It's not a ratified set of regulations, but time is ticking. If this is going to take place next year, which was the plan, then the teams and manufacturers need to know sooner rather than later what they're going to do. And this was at the heart of Cyril's concerns, wasn't it? That, as you mentioned, they've obviously had to scrap their sort of planned improved 25 car, which in itself was annoying, but then they don't know what they're going to do and how they can develop and what direction they can go in, because they're not sure what it's all going to look like. For me, it just needs somebody to make a bit of a firm decision and just be like, right, this is what we're doing. And I know a lot of the drivers have said it, but I would agree with it, is I can understand the logic in trying to make things better, like look for a quick fix, effectively, for 25 and 26. But really, what is that going to achieve? It's not going to bring another new team in next year, is it, realistically? So I think 27 has to be the focus. How they navigate the next 2 years, I'm not brave enough to make that call, I'll be honest. But it does feel like almost too much has been set out, and it would benefit from being a bit more concerted, a bit more of a sort of, this is what we're going to do. And even if people don't agree with it, at least that's a direction. At the minute, it's all just a little bit wishy-washy, dare I say, a bit confusing, I guess, for plenty of people. And I can't imagine, if you're sitting on the board of any OEM around the world, any manufacturer, looking at that and feeling fully confident about that, something to commit to. And that has to be the biggest concern right now.
Yeah, you've hit the nail on the head, and it's exactly what I've written in a column this week for Autosport. It's twofold, isn't it? Because we're trying to fix a lot of problems, but we're also trying to the championship is trying to attract more manufacturers. And prospective manufacturers that are sitting there weighing up whether to commit or not, if they see that a rule cycle has been stopped 2 years before the end of it's supposed to, how do they have the confidence to commit to the next rule cycle, knowing that their investment is going to, you know, reach the desired time span that it's required for? So that is also a sort of factor that is concerning. For me, I think the best blueprint, and again, I'm not advocating that WRC takes on balanced performance, which we see in the World Endurance Championship, but the World Endurance Championship regulations and the way they've gone about that, you cannot argue has been a success. Like, they were, after 2017, they were down to just Toyota as a manufacturer after Porsche and Audi left, and I know there was the Volkswagen diesel scandal that sort of helped sort of necessitate their exits. But what the FIA did and the ACO is they sat down, they worked on a plan for the long-term future of the championship, set out a set of regulations. They were delayed because of COVID, but they came in 2021, and now we've got, 14 manufacturers in the sport. It's booming. The fan interest is quite extraordinary. Certainly from last year, I can tell you that from our sort of Le Mans figures, they were extraordinarily high. And I mean, obviously Ferrari won that race, which is going to generate a bit of extra clout, but you know, the fans were engaged. So I guess what I'm trying to say is that let's think about the future, the long-term future. We don't need to quickly make fixes, as you said. I think if you have a clear goal for the future, I think you just have to sort of trust in it. Have a couple of years of pain, but the rewards will be there.
Yeah, plasters don't fix broken bones, do they? I think that's how I put it. But you're right, WEC, they accepted effectively that they were going to have still a couple of leaner years, but that was fine because they had a vision and a plan to make things better, and that's worked. Now, obviously, there's not necessarily a guarantee that WRC can have quite the same renaissance that WEC did.
Yeah. Because,
as you say, 14 manufacturers is mental to have involved. It's huge credit to them. But I think, I don't know if I want to use the word panicking about what's happening for next year, but there's almost a little bit of that going on. It's like, right, we've got a problem. Well, we need to fix it. But we can afford a little bit of patience because, as I say, yes, if all that goes through has been proposed and we have some Rally 2 plus cars and Rally 1 minus and ever, there's a more equal, potentially more top-line cars in a starting field, that is better, but that is not going to entice a new manufacturer in. And that is the problem at the minute with the WRC. Well, it's one of the problems, I should say. But yeah, that has to be the aim, is to bring more in. And at the minute, I just don't see what the 25-26 sort of solution is doing to help that.
I agree. We could talk about this forever, but we do need to talk about the rest of the Safari Rally Kenya. So I know we've digressed a bit, but we should move back to the rally. And obviously the other big talking point, and we should talk about M Sport's success on this rally, because they had a lot of criticism about reliability last year, but they were, I think, you know, they didn't have any problems with their Puma. Okay, there was a puncture for Adrian Formeau, and there was the suspension damage from a rock from Adrian from Gregoire Munster. But in terms of sort of actual technical or mechanical issues, no dramas for the Puma. And the result of which, coupled with some excellent drive, shall we say, was firstly Formeau, a sort of Rov and Pera-esque drive in terms of knowing when to push, when to back off, and he's delivered a podium, which must feel like buses now, because he had his first one in Sweden and now a second one's come along in the exact round afterwards. And then obviously Munster, obviously unfortunate, but you've got to say, what a performance from M Sport, and firstly Adrian Formeau.
Yeah, I feel bad that it's taken us about, what, nearly 40 minutes to mention Formeau. Sorry, Adrian, because it was an incredible performance, as you say. Clearly what needs to happen is more drivers have to come on this podcast, because we've maintained his good form, haven't we? He came on after Sweden and there he is. It's all down to us, nothing to do with you at all, mate, or your driving. Obviously I'm joking, just to be clear. But yeah, it was superbly managed, as you say, Rov and Pera-esque. There was, I think, one puncture on this final stage of Saturday, but as he himself said, like, if that's my only problem, we're going well. Like, that, it was just a complete performance. Measured, had a plan, stuck to it, got the job done. M Sport, I think, will be very, very happy with that. And as you say, the car proved up to it, which was a bit of a concern and a talking point. Last year, the team did take a bit of flack for the car maybe not being the most reliable. So, I guess, answered those critics very, very well there as well.
Yeah, and absolutely. And we should talk about Mr. Formeau and his now, so I guess he could have a career in comedy as well if he wants to, because his stage end interviews are now becoming quite something. He clearly had an obsession with Talladega Nights this weekend or last weekend, and at the stage end was very much enjoying some Talladega Nights references. But what I want to say here is that it's great to have characters like this, isn't it? I mean, it just makes everything so much better to watch.
Yeah, exactly. I think he's really found himself in his last couple of years, which sounds a little bit sort of cliche, doesn't it? But insert stereotype here. But no, he's definitely grown in confidence. He's more assured of where he sits and where he's at, and he's letting that side of him be seen by the world. I'm sure he's always had that within him, but now we're all getting to enjoy that side. And as you and I now know, having him on the podcast, he was up for a lot of the fun stuff we were doing, which was great to see, and it's clear that he's happy to enjoy himself when he's doing such demanding motorsport as well. So yeah, really, really, really encouraging season so far. I have to say, he has to be in almost three rounds in, but he's an early stake for driver of the year for me. To be third in the championship is above anybody's expectations, so fair play to him.
I have to concur with you. Yeah, he's definitely the driver of the season so far. Like, that's an extraordinary performance from him. And again, like, what does he do now? I mean, he's third in the championship. Do you start thinking? Do you start dreaming? Do you start thinking that maybe this could happen? Or what do you do? I mean, I guess for him, you've just got to think, right, consistency. Let's just keep bagging points and let's just see where we hit.
Yeah, I hope there's no major deviation from strategy here, because it's tempting to look at Croatia and think, he's got a podium on snow now, he's got a podium on gravel, go for the triple, mate, go on, why don't you get one on tarmac? And we know he's a very quick driver on tarmac as well, but I think it would be the wrong thing for him to start changing, because clearly the tactic is working at the minute of effectively measuring myself and bedding myself in. I'm sure for him that's incredibly frustrating to not always go flat out and show the world just where his raw pace is at, but that patience is what's paying dividends right now. I guess if we're halfway into the season and he's still in with Thierry and Elvin, why not go for a push? But at this stage, everybody at the team, nobody's targeted a championship. That's not the expectation. Effectively, it was get some podiums and some nice results. And you've got 2 from 3 now, which is already ahead of what they expected. Obviously, they'd love to have more, but if I was close to Adrian, and I'm sure this is the message coming from Malcolm and Rich Milner at Emma Sport, is don't change anything just yet. Just do what you're doing, because it's working.
Absolutely. And I guess we should now move on to WRC2, where there was another quite remarkable performance, and it's from our winner, the WRC2 winner, Gus Greensmith. So now Gus picked up some sort of stomach bug and was properly ill throughout the weekend. He couldn't really sort of hold down much food or liquid, was sort of running on hydration tablets to get him through, and he's managed to pull off an incredible victory in the circumstances. I have to take my hat off to him, because that's a remarkable performance. And I guess what a way to start your WRC2 campaign, to come back from illness and take victory.
Struggling to keep down fluids and sort of food is a far more diplomatic way than Gus himself put it at the end of the rally, isn't it? But yeah, I completely agree. I think he did this last year, actually, to be fair. Easy to forget that. In Mexico, he started his campaign with a win. He's done the same thing here. But what impressed me was, A, the fact he was able to do that under the difficult circumstances physically. But secondly, even before, I guess, Oliver Solberg was his main rival here, and he had, I think, 2 punctures in the first proper morning. So that obviously set him back. But Gus was ahead of Oliver before that happened. So for me, this was no inherited victory. This was a really, really clever and smart drive from a driver that I think is probably underrated by quite a few now. I know he never always put his best foot forward when he was in the top class, and you could argue he got there too soon, and there's people that are just grunting about it because he got there, I guess, through a bit of sort of financial backing as well. But you cannot deny the lad is performing exceptionally well at the minute in WRC2, and I think he's going to be a real, real contender for Solberg, for Loubet, and all those guys in that championship this year. But I guess, Tom, you can give us a bit of a sort of personal experience of Gus's struggles, because I know you've had, shall we say, similar problems when you've been out in Kenya in previous years.
Yeah, I developed a bit of a misfire in Kenya the first year I was there. I was definitely, definitely very, very ill. In fact, I think that's the worst I've ever been. I went to see the FIA doctor to get some tablets to sort of try and straighten me out a little bit, but I can tell you now it's not pleasant. I struggled to just get through my written work, and I'm not driving a car through the stages, so for what Gus did there, phenomenal for me, absolutely phenomenal. Very, very impressive drive, and I guess it really sets the stall out now for what will be an exciting WRC2 battle, as Oliver Solberg finished second to him at the rally. Let's not forget he also had a little bit of a fever as well. But what a battle we're going to have in WRC2 if those two are firing all cylinders, you know, with obviously the other characters that will come in at different rounds.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's still plenty of drivers that actually haven't entered the championship yet, and we've already got a great battle going on, so it's only going to thicken out. So yeah, I think it's great competition there as always. But I genuinely really do think it's going to come down to the last round again. I think it'll be that close. And I'm interested to see how the strategy works, because I guess for those that maybe aren't aware, what's interesting with WRC2 is you can only do 7 events, and you have to well, six of those seven scores count, so you can drop one of your scores. But you can do all 13 rounds of challenge if you want, but you cannot score points on all of them. You have to choose which rallies you score points on. And that's something that, I guess, bit Solberg quite badly last year, where on the rallies he did nominate, he didn't do so well. And the ones he didn't, he ended up doing, which I guess is a classic case of Sol's Law, isn't it? But this is where I think it could come down to, is picking the right events. And the drivers don't necessarily know. They might well do some sort of investigation work to find out, but you can't know who's turning up when you choose your rallies. So I guess what they'd hope to do is choose the ones where the competition is maybe a bit weaker and they've got a higher chance of winning. Or conversely, do you want to go where everybody's at? If you score points against them, you're denying your rivals the chance to get top points. So there's a lot of interesting strategy in that championship as well.
I guess it's now time, Luke, for our little fun segment that we round off the podcast with, which we have a little bit of a discussion. And I'll start with our first category, which is star of the rally. Who are you going for?
I'd love to think of somebody outside the box and interesting, but I'm going to have to go with Robin Perra. It's impossible not to, given how well he drove and how impressive that performance was. And let's not forget, there won't have been any pressure on him after what happened in Sweden. He's a two-time world champion. He's not in the championship race. He effectively, at this point, can do what he likes. But he didn't have the best start to his season. He bounced back from that incredibly and led pretty much from start to finish, save for the Super Special on Thursday. Yeah, not too much else really to add there. Just a really, really, really polished performance.
It is boring, but I'm going to agree with you because, an absolutely stunning performance. you can't really take it away from him. What he did there was phenomenal. But I will say an honorable mention to Gus Greensmith because, as we just discussed earlier there, that is some achievement. So he gets my honorable mention. But yeah, my star of the rally, definitely Calle Rovanperä, because I guess, you know, we might not see another drive like that again in Safari. It depends how things go. But like for me, that was quite astonishing.
That's a big show. That's an interesting show.
It is show, a big show. I might regret
that. I'm going to steal your job here just to make it more interesting. But yeah, I'll come in there and I'll introduce our second category. Just in case I'm going for the same one and you have to have the dubious honor of saying, oh yeah, I agree. But our next category is unsung hero of the weekend, which we were discussing this in our planning meeting, actually isn't the easiest for Safari because I guess pretty much everybody had some sort of mention. But who would you pick for this category, Tom?
Now, this is a tricky one, isn't it? It is always a tricky one, but I'm going to go and I'm going to refer back to our little discussion about M Sport, and I'm actually going to give it to the M Sport team because for me, they had a very difficult season last year. A lot of criticism, you know, with the reliability issues. They've really pulled together. A lot of people also criticised the team for their driver choice for this season too. After Tanak went to Hyundai, people were like, well, this is just doom and gloom. But they have produced an exceptional start to the season. No real problems with the Puma. Their drivers have performed. They're acting like a real team unit. And I'm going to give it to M Sport for me. They don't get enough credit for what they've done this year.
I like that. It's nice outside the box thinking, actually. I'd never thought about the fact we could go with a team. So, very good. I'm not going to copy you. This one. It's tempting to after that answer. It's a very good one. But for me, I've actually been a bit of a cop-out, and I've got two. The first one is Greensmith, just because of what he did under those circumstances. Although, I guess the small caveat is it has been fairly well publicised, that's what happened. So was he really an unsung hero? I don't know, but it was heroic, so he has to get a shout out here. But the other one for me is Taka Katsuta, because I just think that was a really good performance. Yes, people maybe expect it now of him in Safari, but given what we said before, with all the context of what had happened to him, to bounce back so strongly, I think was really, really good. And I guess none of the post-rally headlines have been about him, they've been about his rally winning teammate. So well done, Taka. Here's your shout out.
Yeah, that's very good. And I will say thank you, Taka, because you did give me a ride in the car a couple of years ago and you didn't throw it in the wall. So I was when I thought that I thought my life was going to be in danger, but you were absolutely a supreme talent behind the wheel and you kept me safe that day. So well done, Taka. Well done, Taka. Quote of the weekend. Now, we've got some choices for this, haven't we? What are you going for, Luke?
I'm going to steal the obvious answer here, I'm afraid. It has to be FOMO, and I guess his double mention of Talladega Nights, but particularly the one at stage end on Saturday, the Ricky Bobby Shake and Bake. It was just so out of the blue, but so perfect. And just funny. Good guy. And obviously his social media team has made the most of it afterwards as well. So yeah, as a package, I think that's one of the things I'll generally remember from this rally is that whole sort of episode of Talladega Nightsness. So yeah, that was good. Highlight for me.
Excellent, excellent stuff. I'm going to go with Gus for his reaction at the end of the rally there, because I think his quote was, I'm not sure if I'm more proud of not shitting myself on Friday than I am winning the rally, which, given the circumstances we've just described, what a response when the TV cameras swung to him at the end of the rally there. So, that for me sort of brought a smile to my face and certainly brought back some also difficult memories for me. Well played, Gus. A great quote.
Yeah, very hard to disagree. And another favourite of mine as well, for sure. But I have to say, I mean, there's always ones you forget about, isn't there? If you went back and watched the coverage, there's always something entertaining. I feel like this year they've really stepped up the stage end game. So well done, guys. It's giving us plenty of entertainment anyway, which is good.
Absolutely. I guess then our final segment then is our sort of takeaway, biggest takeaway from the rally. What are your thoughts, Luke?
This maybe exposes my sort of character. I'd love to be positive here. Honestly, I think it is the high and high struggle and the need for them to, I guess, rectify these problems. No matter wherever the regulations go for 25, they'll need to try and find a stronger safari car if they're going to try and topple Toyota. I think we probably all knew deep down that Toyota had a very good chance here, not just because he had Rovan Perra, but as we've said before, the car has always stood up to the challenge. But yeah, I guess it's that mix, and if I could be a bit more balanced, of Hyundai still struggling, but Toyota having this undisputed reign over the Safari.
Yeah, I think I have to sort of agree with you, actually. It's a mixture of the Toyota dominance and the Hyundai struggles that sort of really sets apart where the championship is right now, isn't it? And I think you're absolutely right in saying, you know, that really if Hyundai want to win this championship, they have to... This is clearly the weakness, isn't it? The reliability of the car. And if they're going to succeed, this has to be resolved. But they have obviously this tricky nature of what can they do to resolve it. So that's the sort of biggest takeaway, isn't it? I have to say, yeah, I agree with you on that. That's it's a boring answer, but I have to say you've nailed that. That's spot on. Well, I guess that is our wrap up of the Safari Rally Kenya. So that's all we've got time for today. I want to say a big thanks to Luke for being my trusty co-driver for this podcast. The WRC will resume with a trip to Croatia's asphalt roads from the 18th to the 21st of April. So be sure to join us for another edition of Gravel Notes soon as we look ahead to the round 4. But again, thanks for listening, and thanks again, Luke, for coming on the show.